Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today is one of the real heroes we have in America, trying to really wake people up, fight for this country. He has never stopped. He is Colonel John Mills, and he has a great new book out you must get. And thank you for joining me, sir. It's always my honor to have you on.
Thank you, Mel. Always an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Well, a little bit about your background for people that might not know you, and then we'll get into a lot of things that you happen to know a lot about that the American people are in the dark on. So first and foremost, just a little bit about who you are and your background a bit.
Well, thank you, Mel. Yeah, 30 plus years in national security service, both in uniform and as a senior civilian in the Office of the Secretary of Defense, multiple combat tours, time at the White House, end of Bush, beginning of Obama, service from all the way from the Cold War, all the way to the current situation, the battle to save our republic.
Yeah, it's amazing where we are now. And I know that you have a new book out, The War Against the Deep State, and it's becoming more and more apparent, you know, they use their conspiracy theory and all that. But, you know, everyone knows at this point that's even has a modicum of sanity, that we are dealing with something unprecedented, I think, in this nation. Not that it hasn't been here the whole time, but because of technology and alliances that have formed that are above our government, multinational, public-private partnerships, as they call them, and all of that, along with their lockstep Agenda 2030, the people of this nation and of the world, their liberty, their individual freedom, their ability to go and do is being attacked, I think, like never before. So let's talk a little bit about what the battlefield looks like right now and what it really is, as opposed to the distraction.
Yeah, I like the term. I think it was Dr. Malone who coined it, is mass psychosis. Which is a term for psychological operations. And you've told me about this new NATO document that's come out that's very disturbing. You know, in the old days, we were the good guys and girls. Mm-hmm. You know, we were the side for righteousness, for democratic, liberal republics. We're a constitutional republic. We told the truth. Now, it's almost Klaus Schwabian, and you know, China's the real threat, but they're still running around saying Trump, 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 Russia, 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 even though Charles McGonigal has been arrested and charged with he was one of the people that when I was in office in 2016, he was the guy feeding us information in early 2016 of Trump, 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 Russia, 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 as the senior executive at the FBI in charge of counterintelligence. Guess who was paying him? Russia.
Russia. Exactly. And that's the thing, is that they've advanced so much, this specific document, but there's a bunch, because now I'm really digging into this hub that they have in Virginia. It looks like NATO has a massive presence right next to Washington, D.C., and they've gone into neuroscience and cognitive warfare and all of this. And all I'm thinking is, well, this is weird, because like you said about Klaus Schwab and these international alliances and what I call the billionaire globalist oligarchy that has, in my opinion, captured our politicians and our nation to a certain extent. And the way that this reads is kind of that, you know, how NATO started when you were there as a defensive operation, that's really no longer what it is, because what it looks like is that this is the global governance, of which is on all their websites. And it's not just the World Economic Forum. It's the UN, it's the World Bank, IMF, all their tentacles. All of it says the same thing. Nation states are over. Global governance is necessary. And therefore, I remember Donald Trump saying it, but all the way back to Kennedy was saying that there was a kind of a world military kind of thing. And now they're not even saying that that's untrue. So what does that do to America defending itself if we are actually putting a lot more money, time, and energy, because even in the stuff they're talking about, Pentagon and DARPA, I'm working with them. It looks like there's an alliance of military that's starting that might not be able to be undone. And then you're looking at our, what they're doing to our military, gutting it. They can't recruit, what's happening in the military training schools. It seems very ominous and not beneficial to the people of this country or our security or our safety.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. And I just, one thing I didn't mention, I just came back from Panama. Michael Yon and Ann Vandersteel invited me down there and spent several days down there. We went on the old Fort Clayton, which was one of the many U.S. facilities down there, in which we walked away from. There was no reason to walk away from it after Hanover the Canal. There was nothing in the treaty that said walk away. We did. We created a vacuum and China stepped in. But on the old Fort Clayton, it just made me want to puke, because who occupied a lot of the almost brand new buildings we handed over? The UN. Panama has become, in the Americas, kind of a base of operations for the UN and the World Economic Forum. Why? We walked away and created a vacuum. So all these former DoD facilities, now the UN is occupying it, and it's insidious.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's the same thing with Bagram. I mean, we walked away from that. Who's manning Bagram? Obviously the CCP would be there, but again, what is people should understand, because a lot of people want to point around and be like, oh, Russia or China or Iran or whatever. But it seems to me that there's a group of, that there's an alliance of people that they don't have any allegiance to any nation. They don't have any, they don't feel for any one people. They're in this movement of this global governance where they all think they'll take a part of it. And what I keep saying lately, and I want people to understand, because I do think it's true, and I wonder what you think. You know, Donald Trump says a lot, or has in speeches said, they're not after me, they're after you, and I'm in the way. And I've redefined it, looking at the battlefield geopolitically, is they're not after America, they're after the world, and America's in the way. And I think that has a lot to do with what is happening internally. I think that we are under attack on multiple levels, on a very high level, and it is military, and it is to take down this nation from the inside, to remove us so that they can have their, you know, dystopian, you know, global governance class rule over it, like Hunger Games. What's your take on that?
The Hunger Games is in the 13 districts, very right. Appropriate. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a lot of crazies, whether it be Jen Easterly at DHS CISA, Tony Blinken at State Department, who ran the greatest election interference operation in history unlawfully from the UPenn Biden Center nonprofit, and the 51 Intel officer letter. These are just elites. These are elites and globalists that they know what's right. We need to shut up, sit down, do what we're told, and get vaccinated. And, you know, life will be beautiful. So, I mean, but these people are crazy, and we just have to resist them and stop them and be victorious.
Yeah, and you brought up Blinken at the Biden Center at UPenn. There's also one at University of Delaware. And what people don't understand is, not only did the CCP give them money, but if you go look at their websites and what they're talking about, they are full on globalists. Like, they are not. And, you know, it's funny, I was reading something from one of them, and it was talking about how nationalism was a problem, a real problem. You know, that globalism is really the only way forward, because, you know, the planet. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, how do they get to decide? You know, they're only getting to decide because we're allowing it. So when it comes to your new book, The War Against the Deep State, how do you now define that? You know, people can always say, who are they? There's no they. But I don't understand how, after COVID and the lockstep of the entire planet going along the same route, that they, people don't understand. No, there is a deep state, and it's multinational, but we have one here. And what do you define that as?
Well, there's three groups and four corners, but there's also, it's defined in an unlawful fourth, fifth, and sixth branch of government. So the three groups are the bureaucrats, the technocrats, and the plutocrats. The four corners are big government, big tech, a big pharma, big academia. In war against the deep state. It's the unlawful surveillance state that is developed, and I helped create in 2007 to 2014 for good purposes. But it's really the fourth, fifth, and sixth branches of government, and that's the administrative state. It's the marriage of federal law enforcement, intelligence, and big tech. And it's the nonprofits. So it's the fourth, fifth, and sixth branches of government supported by this pervasive surveillance state. That's really where we're at. And that is the deep state trying to control America.
Yeah. And there's not, when you look at it all and you follow that money that you're talking about, because there's also all of these think tanks, you know, Rand, Brookings, all of them, very opaque places, not really sure how much power they have, but it does appear that they have more power because it appears that they are writing a lot of the legislation. If you trace it back and look at the footnotes, you're going to find one of these big think tanks. And then on the other side, we have all these lobbyists. We're finding out more and more about the incredible amount of lobbyists involved in the Ukraine operation and the contractors and all of that. Then you have the Pentagon and the military industrial complex. Where does that leave our selected officials? Because now I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, well, the District of Columbia, in my opinion, is a total failure. You know, they were all scared about it. I'm writing a book now, so I've been looking at the Federalist Papers and the decade of arguments that went into creating the Constitution and why. And it, a lot of them were against the centralized government being the District of Columbia. To me, it's a failure at this point, mainly because of the outside influence and money. But how much power do our elected, selected officials have anyway? Because it doesn't appear, if you really dig in, that they're really running anything.
Well, yeah. Once you're in office, if you're one of the 3,000 to 4,000 appointees of a president, you're supposed to be apolitical and agnostic and carrying out your duties, your sworn duties. But you just get overtaken by this barrage of people who want to influence you. Now, there's nothing wrong. We have a right in our Constitution to petition our elected and appointed officials, but this is a little bit different. This is they almost get surrounded and bullied and overwhelmed by these groups, and it is really hard to make decisions when you just this insane avalanche of experts.
Right.
You can't even think. I mean, it's really challenging, but that's what we deal with in the swamp. And then disaggregating the swamp, Trump was in the process of trying to move departments and agencies away from DC, which I think is a brilliant plan.
Me too.
But there's too much concentration of activity and power in one place, which creates the swamp.
Yeah. And it's a very deep swamp. And the other thing also is that not only was he doing that, he was moving them to logical places. I believe he wanted to move the Department of Agriculture to Kansas or somewhere, I believe, in the Midwest. And they were wanting to move the FBI and all of that. I honestly really look at it and I think, in my opinion, that would be the best thing. I also think it would be better if people, when they were elected, stayed in their states and came into D.C. to work, because what you're talking about, there was a book I read, a great book by Whitney Webb about the United States of blackmail, or something to that effect, the title. It was a really in-depth book, but it was a lot about blackmail and threats and what really happens on the government level. How dangerous is it in D.C.? Is there a sense that people you know, are coerced? Is it once you get there that then it becomes like either you join in? I'm just curious from your inside point of view. I mean, you're military your whole life, so it's not that dangerous for you. But say you were, because good people don't run for office. It doesn't look good. You don't want your family torn apart, your life torn apart, constant threats. I mean, it looks like Gladiator there. Are we at a point where good people don't even want to be involved? Or once they get there, it becomes dangerous?
It's a brutal environment. It's a brutal environment. And, you know, I survived and departed in early 2018. But it is many people come to the senior levels if they're careerists. Many of them just can't survive and immediately want to leave if they're a career civilian or even military, because it is a brutal, it's a contact, we always say it's a contact sport, and you got to have sharp elbows if you're going to survive. I mean, I was able to survive just because of my advanced training and abilities. And, but you, it's, boy, I mean, it's like, I always, it's like Rollerball, James Caan, and the original Rollerball, not the remake sucked. I mean, but the Rollerball, I mean, it just makes no sense. You skate around in a circle and punch each other in the face. That's about what happens at all these meetings. And, what happens, and I've noticed, and I started pointing this out even when I was inside of government, is a narrative gets established on a topic, and that is the absolute end of analysis or discussion on the topic. Everybody just starts parroting the narrative on a topic. And that's it. Nobody questions the narrative. This is what happened. This is the situation. This is what happened. Next topic. Let's move on. You know, it's like the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
The Warren Commission says this is what happened. End of discussion. Move on. And well, hold it. That's not, as time goes on, there's more facts that come out. There's better understanding of facts that have already come out. We want to be open-minded to science. There's not, Rush Limbaugh used to say, there's no such thing as settled science.
Right.
That's what happens in the swamp. Everybody says, settled science, shut up, move on. No, we want truth. And truth doesn't evolve, but as time goes on, things change.
Right.
We get better understanding, more facts. And you have to revisit, say, we need to revisit this. So, but that's what happens, is the ironclad narrative stifles any form of discourse or discussion, no matter the topic. And everybody goes, no, that's not the narrative. Everybody says it's this. Just be quiet. Let's move on.
Right. And why, in your opinion, from your long 30 years in the military industrial complex, why at this point, when it's very clear that there is something above this nation that is manipulating our country, are there not more military vets and generals and colonels and people like you and General Flynn and General McGregor, all these, there's a handful of guys out there that are living up to their oath well after they are in positions of power to continue down that path. I guess you're born that way. I'm surprised that we aren't seeing more military pushback. In fact, Milley's speech the other day was so disturbing, I thought, and so below what you would hope for the military. And then, we see John Kelly out there writing a book now. Like, what is the disconnect on the level of, supposedly esteemed, retired, high-level military?
Well, they have forgotten their oath of office to the Constitution, and they have been captured. They're captured opposition, and they now have taken an oath to Caesar and the narrative. That's the challenge. Milley, it was just robotic. And, anytime the elite say authoritarianism, that's a code word for Trump. Right. We have to watch out for authoritarianism. I'm going right on. You mean China, right? China. I'm like, oh, no. Trump. Give me a break. That's the problem with these psychos. They're so intellectually smart and open-minded, their brains have fallen out. And it's all this code word stuff of,
right.
Oh yeah, yeah. When we say authoritarianism,
Right.
We mean Trump. It's Trump. Right. I'm going right on. Xi. It's the greatest threat to the world is Xi and the Chinese Communist Party. Oh no. It's Trump.
Right. I mean, these
people are crazy. And you got to challenge them and call them out for what they are. Don't let them get by. If you're in any form, don't let them get by. And yeah, we need more career, civilians and military to stand up and put their foot down on this craziness. Milley always was batty. When he was chief of staff of the army and we had the downsizing under Obama, he was brutal in the downsizing. You know, during the Clinton years when we had downsizing, we had a very reasonable, right-minded downsizing, and Colin Powell made sure so we didn't just mass line up everybody against the wall and shoot them in the forehead and to get them out of it. We just had this vicious downsizing. No separation benefits, no early retirements, just, you know, in the minorest infraction, you were out. It was a crazy town.
Yeah.
And guess who was pushing that? Millie.
Yeah. I think that's where people get to the place. Some people will say, well, why did Trump keep Millie? Why did Trump keep Ray? Why did he pick Bill Barr of all people? And then Trump would go out there and say, I don't know him. Well, why would you pick somebody you don't know? And that's, I think a lot of people look now at the Trump presidency. I mean, you were there, you saw it and think, well, how is he surrounded by so many people that were so clearly against him? And I know from the inside that he really believed once he won that people would come around and that they'd want to do what was best for the country. And that wasn't the case. It was all hands on deck to destroy him and not really allow him to do anything. But, you know, you look at these people. How does that work when you're on the inside? You know, it does appear that maybe four or five people really in Trump's circle or even at all for him. And the things that have come out about Fauci, that he was behind the scenes, a meeting with CIA, and, you know, they were telling false information. You know, do you look at that and think, you know, if Trump gets back in, like, who's going to be advising him? Whoever was advising him on hiring, it really was taken for a ride, as far as I can see.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to name any names. And I, for full transparency, I was a Trump appointee 18 months out from the end of his first term. I was appointed. I was not onboarded. There's two steps to the process, appointment and onboarding. The career government lawyer at Department of Energy, she sat on my case, had 12 points of contention. And even the White House liaison at Energy and even at the White House, they're saying, come on, John, just do what she says. And I said, absolutely not. She's wrong on every point. And I stood my ground. They're going, John, come on, we're going to yank your appointment if you don't just say yes. And I said, absolutely not. I'm right. She is wrong. Now, she conceded over those 18 months. She conceded on all 12 points, the final one being a few days before the election. And the rest is history. But yeah. It just, the problem is a lot of people, you know, do not have the iron will and the Churchillian resolve of Trump. And so, what in book one, The Nation Will Follow, I talked about an encounter in the A-ring with somebody who said, we see more opportunity, a Republican who said, we see out more opportunities with her. Guess who became a Trump appointee under Mattis, that same person. Right. Okay, so they slipped in, clearly another Trumper, but they slipped in. And this is the challenge. We're going to have to vet a lot better. We've already started collecting names and things like that. We just got to do a lot better and have a better list of names. And it just became chaotic. But we learned a lot.
Yeah. And that's the thing people have to understand. I hear that also from Kash Patel, too, has talked about that as well. I know that literally he thought, Donald Trump, that when you, like a CEO, when you win and you go in there and you got great ideas and he had all these different ideas that, like, okay, now we all, the election's over. Now we get to the business of fixing and reinvesting and rejuvenating America from the inside out and strengthening the military, which he did with oil and gas, which he did, all undone within a few short months of the Joe Biden selection. And where are we now? What is our way out of this? Because now it appears that so much of the globalist multinational public-private partnership, and then I call them the billionaire globalist oligarch that has captured America, are pulling the strings in all different directions. Most people, everyone that watches me knows a lot about, I've really dug into BlackRock and Vanguard and their unbelievable control over this country that never should have happened. Also, you know, you go back to Obama and the collapse of the banks. Now we're dealing with the central bank thing. We've got the open borders. So you guys are going in there with a lot more on your plate. Is that I think what a lot of people don't want or hope won't happen is that it'll take a whole lot of time to unravel the damage done in this short period of time to our country. What are the key things that you see strategically that can be done first things first to turn this country around? Because a lot of people out there that don't really follow us or follow you, they don't might not know the stakes at which we are at right now in this nation. But I firmly believe that if they do pull off the steal again right in front of our faces and 2024 is a one party win, which is what they want, that one party, in my opinion, won't be American. It won't be constitutional. It won't be Bill of Rights. It'll be very aligned with Agenda 2030 and the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So there's a lot we need to do between now and then. But let's say it all, everything goes, Trump's back in. What are the thing? Where? What are the points that get touched first or even before he gets in that can turn things around the quickest, in your opinion? The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is gonna look like. I'm gonna do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm gonna bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof, it's cancel proof, it's truth, it's transparency, it's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started.
Well, first of all, it would be wonderful for Donald J. Trump to be Speaker of the House. That's it. That would be a great opening move to just turn their apple cart over. And we got to make sure we take care of in advance of the 24 election. We got Maricopa, Fulton, and Philadelphia, because we got to really change the dynamic. And that depends on patriots in those areas. I'm not a resident of any of those counties. I can mentor, I can coach, I can point out, but I'm not a resident. So we need patriots in those areas to rise up. I know we're tired, we're fatigued, et cetera, et cetera. We got to get that second energy and really make it happen, put our shoulder to the wheel. But we got to have a great slate of appointees ready to go as soon as possible, bringing them in as fast as possible. We cannot let careerists, we do have to, in my situation, everybody has to go through this. It's the legal review after an appointment. That doesn't mean you're in. It means you got to go through a number of things, including an extensive legal and background review.
Yeah.
We got to get people ready to go as much as possible right up front. And those all important White House liaisons at the departments and energies, because remember, when you're a presidential appointee, you're really, unless you're actually working at the executive office of the president, you're really an appointee to that department or agency, which is a fiefdom in itself. And we cannot let those White House liaisons, who are usually 21, 22-year-olds without a whole lot of experience, God bless them. I don't mean to be an ageist in any way, shape, or form, But they've got to have a, they cannot let, a lot of them get become captured opposition by the careerists. And
Right.
especially a career lawyer says something, they go, well, the lawyer said this. Well, I don't give a crap if the lawyer said this. I can read the law too. And like with my case, she was wrong on every single point. And she gave in on every single point. It just took 18 months. Okay. And they have to have a, they have to, in between slurping down their grape juice box, they have to read the law themselves. It was all important. White House liaisons, very
Right.
important. And we have to have policy ready to go immediately for implementation. And, you know, again, I'm all for a professional career civil service corps. But that doesn't mean we let them run the show. We can't be, this is the common pitfall of the political appointees, is they come in and say, I'm a political appointee, I'm going to act political. That's a one-way ticket to getting booted out. And I've seen Obama folks get booted out because they forgot you can't be political when you're in your appointed, you're sworn into your appointed position.
Right.
You are a professional and you must carry out the law. Okay. And so don't get political. And I've had to put up with that Obama folks, and I've seen them get booted. And, you know, at the same time, I've been interrogated by Obama folks. Are you a member of the Tea Party? You know, the irrelevant question, irrelevant question.
Right.
I'm a professional careerist. Okay. And we got to start executing immediately. I mean, government is a slow plot process. That's okay, because that's the purpose of you know, a constitutional republic. You know, totalitarian dictatorships move fast. Okay,
Right.
that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. So there is actually a very wise background for slowness in government. But slowness in government should not inhibit us from moving fast to have the right things in the right place to make it move as fast as possible.
Right. Well, as everyone remembers, within days of Joe Biden, they took our country back a lot, but within days of him taking office, he dropped about 30 executive orders right off the bat, which obviously were written well before Joe Biden was probably even selected by the Democrats to be the front guy. So, you know, that I know that it is, and I know you and a lot of people are back there, you know, looking at this because they also had the entire, as most people remember or that watch me, Transition Integrity Project, where all these outside guys like Norm Eisen and Brock and Dunn and all these people got together, Podesta, Michael Steele, and they did war gamed kind of a year out of the 2020 election, every single way that Donald Trump could win. I mean, they put it out there. The people on the in that team, that crew that I'm talking about, the Weissmans and the Eisens and the, you know, that never go away. Those are the elitist operatives, in my opinion, but they put everything that they're going to do out. It's very strange behavior, but they do. Like, even it's crazy, but most people know that a year before 2020 election, not only did they simulate and war game out with Podesta playing Joe Biden, all the ways that Trump could win, but all the ways that they could stop him from winning. And the one thing I'm not sure was on there was the plandemic, but almost everything else that happened was. And then there was another document where they were talking about once the Senate and Congress was chosen in 2022, you know, what they would do then. And the same guys in this facts first, and these are really high-level lawyers that use lawfare and can manipulate the law and stuff. I mean, I think that, and I hope that this is happening, but I think that, you know, too often it seems that the conservatives or the Republicans don't do that. I mean, if they don't, it's just, I saw Victor David Hansen the other day too on Tucker was like, you know, so we're going to lose again being the good guys or, you know, not going there. I mean, a lot of the techniques that these people use, including how you mentioned before, the philanthropies, the NGO with Arabella and Open Society, I mean, they are great at organizing. I mean, they are on the other side. Why don't we do that on our side? And are we now? We should be now at least learning from how strategic they are way before, you know, the timing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mel, is we've got to get better at these you know, these arts and strategies, operational arts that they have shown. You know, I think part of it, there's a little bit of a DNA difference. We want government to be limited. We want people to just be left alone. You know, we're very good at being self-sufficient, raising our families. You know, but they're all about their nanny staters that just always want to manipulate everything. They're changers that are changing everything just for the sake of changing.
Right.
They're never, ever, ever satisfied. Something, you know, you can't have a 20-ounce drink. You can only have a 16-ounce drink. No, you can only have a 12-ounce drink. No, you can't have a plastic straw. No, you can't do that. It's endless because they're never happy. They're never satisfied. They're just downright. They are very dissatisfied people. And the more they try to create utopia, the worse it becomes. They'll create disaster after disaster and move on and create another disaster. So I don't want to be like that necessarily, but there is a strategy in their operational art we got to become better at and be ready to go. You mentioned the executive orders. That's the brilliant one, is you got to have a bunch of executive orders ready to slap down on day one.
Right, right. And that's what you guys, I know that there's a lot of people in the back that are, including you, that are looking at where we are and how to turn it around. I mean, the biggest problem, obviously, is, I think most people understand, is the border and the amount of money. We don't know where it's going, that is going out of this country. The other thing that you were there for, too, is Trump calling out NATO. First of all, he did try to dismantle a bunch of the globalist strongholds over our country. A lot of those are really about transfers of wealth, because of the more wealth that they put into the globalist organizations, the less we have, and then thus the less we can fight. But, you know, he got out of the fraudulent Paris Climate Accords. He was getting out of UNESCO, which is a force for, I think, awful force on the planet. You know, they run the global education, which people don't realize is global and coming from the UN and the Rockefeller partners and all that. So he undid that. He was getting the World Health Organization. Then he went to NATO and he asked about, you know, why the U.S. was basically funding this alliance of a world military type situation. And from what I'm looking at, as I'm looking at NATO, and it does appear that the way that NATO speaks is as if they are the military above the nations that they have in their alliance, military. And we've been transferring so much of our technology. A lot of people don't realize we're not sending just stuff that they're saying, like Javelin missiles or whatever. We've sent a lot of our technology, meaning drones and they're testing weapons. And it does appear that they are kind of building some kind of NATO base in Ukraine. I mean, something is going on, but where does NATO fall in terms of, and I don't think people understand this, I don't, in terms of the US military is here, and it sounds like from their own language that NATO is above our military right now, and that's not how it should be, and I don't think the American people would ever accept that if they knew that. What is the dynamic between NATO and the United States military?
Well, NATO, I think in many ways, was created for a good reason. North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It was an alliance. It was a treaty for like-minded Western democratic nations, mostly, to come together to stand against evil and insipid Soviet expansionism. So good idea. But this is where all these good ideas become corrupted. Supreme Commander of NATO is normally an American, and the name's escaping me right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Stoltenberg, he's the NATO secretary. He's the NATO secretary, but the military commander is normally an American, which usually is dual hatted as being the Supreme Allied Commander NATO, SACEUR, Supreme Allied Commander Europe. Is normally also our commander of European command, but it's become just in the passages you were citing out of that plan, that sure didn't sound like a NATO document. That sounded like a WEF Klaus Schwabian document. And I think that's the problem. And I think one of the dangers is NATO is becoming almost indistinguishable from the European Union. If you look at a military unit listing of NATO and the European Union, they're citing the same units from the member countries. And it's like, okay, so are these NATO units or are these European Union units? Which are they? And I mean, even when I was in office, I'm going, I saw this 20 years ago. I'm going, this doesn't make any sense here. And, oh, John, just don't worry about it. Can anybody explain who do these units belong to? The nation? Do they belong to NATO? Or do they belong to the European Union? They're all the same units. And they're being listed against three organizations. It's very confusing. So I think NATO is really de facto blending and blurring and merging into the European Union, which is, no question about it, a front from the WEF and Klaus Schwab. And hence, we used to be the good guys, and now we're just starting to use this language. You know, we have to stand up to authoritarianism, code word for Trump.
Right.
I go, yeah, we got to stand up to authoritarian. That you mean Xi and Putin, right? No, we mean Trump. You know, it's like, oh, you crazy. So, yeah, this is what we're dealing with. People are just so brilliant, so open-minded. Their brains have fallen out, and they have no moral starting point, no moral foundation. And they're not immoral, they're amoral. They don't even know what morality is. So it can be whatever you want it to be. And in the perfect world of the future, you know, I mean, they'll just constantly change the definition of good.
Yeah.
So it'll never end.
They change the definition of everything every day. But no, that's really important, because that's the other thing that I notice more and more is the narrative along different lines. So, and I believe that a lot of it connects to that Agenda 2030. Again, I said the American people knew nothing about it.
Which was all over Panama. 2030 was all over Panama. Panama wants Americans, but we disappeared and created a vacuum. So China and the UN just came in.
Yeah, and the truth is, like you're saying, they all have, I tell people that don't want to believe that there's a they, I say, just go to any one of these websites. I can give you the list. There's not that many, about 10 organizations that all connect. They all have an Agenda 2030 document. If they have an Agenda 2030 document that looks exactly like the next one, and it happens to be the IMF, the World Bank, the World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, NATO, UN, maybe they're working together. You know, so it's like, at what point? And I think that that's where what comes in is sovereignty of this nation. You are a scholar also of history and you know, have studied the Constitution and why they wrote it. You and I both know that these men and some women, but men mostly, that they looked at every kind of government ever existing from the beginning of time to find the best solution for the United States, which is a constitutional republic. It's funny, I even read in there, because I'm writing a book myself, and I was digging into this, and it was like they rejected the idea of democracy, mainly because, well, what if the majority of the majority that rules is demoralized, dehumanized, and depraved, basically? So then what? You know, so there still has to be democratic values, but at the same time, what we did was a constitutional republic, and that's, I think, what is often mistaken in America. But one thing I do know that you've dealt with all this time, a lot of things that America has done, like you said, we used to be the good guys. It's always about protecting democracy. Right now, it's about protecting democracy from Donald Trump. But it used to be going into Libya or Syria or Afghanistan or wherever, where there weren't democracies to begin with. This we got to protect democracy seems like a fraudulent claim that's made over and over, like that America's biggest threat is white supremacy. So what do they mean when they say they're protecting democracy from Donald Trump, or they have to go into a foreign nation to protect democracy? I feel like that's one of those things, like you said earlier, about changing what words mean.
Yeah, it's when they say protect democracy, that's a code word for make sure Donald Trump doesn't get back in office. They're in their heart and their spirits, they're totalitarians. They just love power over the common people. And I heard it from both parties when I did time at the White House, end of Bush, beginning of Obama, you know, almost literally verbatim from politicals from both sides was, you know, the American people are too stupid. We have to make these decisions for them. And that's it. That's the imperious attitude. And it just is a totally wrong. I totally am against it. It's antithetical to everything this country was founded upon. The government is owned and operates for the people. And the people own the government. It's not the other way around. But that's the problem with these crazies.
Yeah. Well, I think you said it earlier. It's also about local, getting involved locally and not watching this. You know, my big thing is for the people that do know what's going on, you know, a lot of people think it's enough to to argue on Twitter, which is a fruitless and I think mentally not good for people in general. But there's a lot of local action that can be taken, because what you're talking about, a lot of this stuff in DC is also in the local governments. And from my research, it appears the same people I'm talking about, it really does go back to. If you draw the lines, you're gonna end up, if you go back and look at this, you know, you'll find that the Council of Foreign Relations, but a lot of the Rockefeller influence between UN, Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, then you get Brzezinski and Kissinger, and then you just follow all the things that they've done since, you know, basically the 40s, and you get here. And there's a lot we can do, because we do have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But people have to understand that these people were very strategic also in going in locally. So what people, while they're looking at DC and they're looking at all these unconstitutional agencies and what they're doing, they don't necessarily realize that in their town, but these people were so strategic that they started 20 years ago or further going into small municipalities and taking power and into the hands of this globalist elite, whether they knew it or not, financially or otherwise, NGOs. What do you have to say to the American people out there that still this far into this battle, which we are in a battle to save America? I honestly think left and right have to get together and realize the one thing that we all can agree on is that the fight for freedom and sovereignty of America should come first, because nothing else matters if we lose it. So what do you say to local people? And what are they going to learn in your book that they can then take to the sphere of influence that they have, be it in a small town, in a rural community, or in an inner city, or wherever, that the people can take back the power? Because that's really what's supposed to be going on here. And if they did, these people would have no authority to do any of this crazy globalist stuff, because the people would say no. But they don't. They need to know what to do, I think.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Mel. And because we spend a lot of time getting angry about the swamp, the elite, the deep state, but we don't realize it all starts, and they're doing the same thing right where we live, right. The 3,300 county equivalents. So you need to spend 95% of us need to spend 97% of our energy locally, because guess what? They've created all these deep staters, globalist elites have created cadres that do the exact, they're mini-me's that are nanny staters right where we live, and we're letting them get away with it. This is the foundation of our constitutional republic. And so if our foundation isn't good, our republic isn't good. And so we need to get clean counties and hold those county councils, school boards, election boards, registrars, sheriffs, judges, and prosecutors accountable. You have to hammer them daily. Read the state laws, read the state election code. Go to all these open mic sessions, because you're going to find a cadre of globalist elite mini-me's right where you live, the more you peel back the onion. And that's where the WEF loves to have these gatherings, and counties will send cadres of people to these WEF gatherings, and we don't even realize it.
Right.
So that's all important. You know, and they say, but they're watching the national battle. Okay, that's great. The battle, really, the foundation is right where we live. And I, you know, the greatest influence an individual citizen can have on, like, the big battle is also crash the market capitalization of these woke companies. Minimize your spend. Everybody needs to minimize their spend on these companies. I mean, you know, sometimes it's unrealistic to go totally cold turkey, but do your best to minimize spend at these woke companies and crash their market cap. And we've done a great job of that. Disney, Kohl's, Target, all these stores have really been we've really helped crash the market cap. So keep at it and minimize spend as much as possible at these woke companies.
Great. Now, your new book is called War Against the Deep State. You have an excellent book that you wrote before. The Nation will follow as well. You are doing amazing work out there. I know that you're on the front lines, too, and really trying to save this country right now. It has to be all hands on deck. And you're a really big part of, I believe, what will turn this country around and pretty fast. You guys, you know what's going on and a lot more than most. So how can people get the book? How can people follow you? How can people find you and keep up on what you're doing? Because as we both know, you're doing a lot.
No, thank you so much, Mel. I appreciate that. So Colonel Rhett John, Colonel R.E.T. John, Substack, Getter, and Truth. Sign up for Substack and you will say, make it stop, John. Make it stop, please. You will get overwhelmed. I am prodigious on the production there.
Great. And,
War Against the Deep State. Go to waragainstthedeepstate.com. And you can also find the Nation Will Follow there. But for the Nation Will Follow, if you want an autographed copy, go to Lindell My Store
An
autographed copy. The Nation Will Follow. But new book, waragainstthedeepstate.com.
Well, we needed it. We needed your book because a lot of people still, they get the concept something's very wrong. They know that it's not America. They know that it's kind of globalist, but you really kind of lay down for all people exactly what we're dealing with and what they can do. And I think that that's a real gift to everyone out there. So go get the book, War Against the Deep State, and understand it and then share that information. Because like I say to everyone, you know, A, courage is contagious. So get out there and speak. And B, we got to all be Paul Revere in our local community and make sure that people know what's going on and their power to stop it. Thank you so much, Colonel. I will see you again, and always great listening to you, and thank you for all you're doing for the country. I really appreciate your service so much.
Thank you, Mel. Always an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations, and this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings, and that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings. I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, and my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now, and I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends, and I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing. Everyone's been asking me what I've been doing because I am in better shape than I've been probably maybe in my life, and I am now thriving and I have so much energy. I'm going around, I'm doing all these tours and I'm doing the show and I'm showing up at small events and big events. And I'll tell you the one thing that's definitely changed my life is superfoods. Mel K Superfoods. When I got involved with superfoods in the beginning, I was not eating right. I was not sleeping right. I was not, it was mid-COVID, so I wasn't really doing much and I was doing a lot of things wrong. And then I found superfoods and it has changed me from the inside out. Not only have I dropped weight, which wasn't even the goal, I really wanted to detox. I wanted to help my immune system. I wanted to make sure I didn't get sick while a lot of other people were, and superfoods came into my life and changed everything. I now think about what I'm eating. I don't have cravings. I don't eat late night. There's a whole protocol. It's so easy. It's laid out for you. You take it out of the box. It's there. All your food's taken care of, all your nutrients, all your energy, all your protein. It is an amazing way to change your life from the inside out. Superfoods changes everything. It gives you a protocol. It gives you a schedule. You know what to do. You know what you're eating. You feel great. You look great. Your life's getting better. And the one thing I know is you can go to themelkshow.com, go down to Superfoods, and you can start your journey. Because today is the day. I will tell you, I waited. And then I started Superfoods. And within 3 months, my entire life changed for the better, more than I could have imagined. MelKShow.com, go to partners page, down to Superfoods, and click on the link. And you will find a whole new world that will change your mind, change your body, change your life. So when you get Superfoods, that helps me and helps this show keep going. I cannot tell you how much it's changed my life for the better, and it will yours too. And enjoy the rest of the show. Mel K Superfoods. Get over there now. There's no time like the present.